I'm Akron, Ohio. This is episode 199 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we are reviewing the 1935 picture, Bride of Frankenstein. So people were talking, Martin Scorsese has been in the news. I just love that he calls them pictures.
It's so quaint.
Yeah, it's awesome. I can't get away with it. No one's taking me seriously when I'm referring to Bride of Frankenstein as a picture. Mm-hmm. But Marty, oh, he can get away with it. Love that man. What do you guys... Oh, we'll get to it. Anyways, I'm your host, Nick, and today I'm joined by...
Eva.
Sir.
Thumbo.
And Kyle.
Have you guys seen these controversial statements by Martin Scorsese?
Was it about the MCU?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He basically said they're not even movies, they're just theme parks.
Oh. Speaking of theme parks, so I'm a huge fan of Shark Tank, and I saw this... One of the old episodes, it featured this is back from like 2012, featured a business called Corks Away. And essentially, like one of those drink tour cruises, except the guys, they were asking them, like, well, what's your vision for the future? And one of their ideas, how did they describe it?
I need a second. Okay. So,
what was the term that they used? They wanted to make a ride.
Yes, to have a Las Vegas ride of a booze cruise. So it would be like you would get on a little boat and just like go around like some kind of like
wheels or like a drag.
Yeah.
Why?
So you could have the whole booze cruise experience.
Only on land.
Indoors. Not even like an outdoor like the Jaws ride at Universal Studios that's like a fake boat. This would be
I love it. Yeah, sorry.
So do they invest?
Yes, no. Are we going?
No. They tanked. They not only didn't invest, however, they closed like a year or so later, just their business. Mm. Oh, God, it was awful.
That's too bad.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Okay, so Bride of Frankenstein. This is a 1935 picture, sequel to 1931's Frankenstein. Bride of Frankenstein is directed by James Whale. It stars Boris Karloff as the monster. And is she credited as ?
She is.
Is the bride, but it is Elsa Lanchester.
She's probably a question mark because she's on screen for about 30 seconds.
But she's also on screen as Mary Shelley.
Yeah, she's in the beginning too.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Man, it's a whole new world for you.
Yeah.
You've just been learning so much lately. You see what happens when you come to the show?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a new fantastic point of view. There's no one to tell us no or where to go.
I was like, I know that, but I can't remember why.
I thought that was a nice way to intro it with the 1816
framing device, as we've talked about on the show.
It was one of my picks.
Did you talk about how it ended though, and how it resolved? And
it doesn't close.
It doesn't really.
It doesn't close.
There's no bookend.
Yeah. I don't know.
I did kind of want it to
come back.
It doesn't really need it, but I just like the symmetry of when it does come back.
Yeah.
Like
Lord Byron going, shit, that was great.
Yeah.
And then because they end.
Yeah.
Let's publish that in your husband's name.
Yeah.
So I don't watch a ton of older movies, but I do kind of like how they always just end. They don't have to drag out the ending.
No.
Like it just
the thing gets
resolved and then the credits just roll. Yeah. They don't need to revisit the families of everybody or check in on all the characters.
Or one last kind of scare.
You don't need to know how Mimi's doing or Minnie or what? Minnie. Yeah.
We'll talk about Minnie.
Yeah. I mean, I as much as I would have loved to hear what she's up to, because
Nick's got a lot of feelings.
She's a hoot.
A lot of feelings.
I don't know if you guys caught this, but she's clearly the third supernatural entity in the movie, because she teleports.
She's everywhere.
Everywhere.
She is everywhere in that movie.
She also is clearly running the town. They're like, this person's dead. What about the other person? I got it.
Is she in the original movie?
No.
Okay. Because the way they introduce her, I was ready to just refer to her as like some gypsy or whatever, and then she's suddenly the help in the house. She's like the maid.
She's around a lot.
And then when they're taking out Frankenstein later on in the movie, she's like the lead of the mob, and like she's everywhere.
Mm.
She's crazy.
So it starts off with the framing device of it's Mary Shelley
and Byron.
And Byron and her husband. They're talking about this story that she wrote, and they basically recap the film Frankenstein, then she goes, well, actually, what I wanted to do was this. And then that's
We are off.
Yeah, and then we're off into Bride of Frankenstein. And it turns out that in that fire that no one could escape from, guess what? He escaped from it.
The thing I love about that is the Frankenstein's monster that we see in this film has burns. His hair is gone. His face looks different than it did in the first movie. That, like, there's actually a consideration of the plot in the first movie to make him different in this one.
So they hit
I noticed, like, even on his face and stuff, that was really rad. Yeah.
So they hit a couple tropes just in that beginning. Like, we talked about the framing device or the frame story. Their exposition is that, as you know, but since people didn't have, like, DVDs and stuff at home, you had to have watched it 4 years prior, and people probably don't remember the specifics. And if you didn't see it and you're like, oh, hey, I want to check out this picture, which is what they called him back then, the As You Know actually is really functional because people may not know. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know, they catch you up really quickly and you don't.
There's not a lot of weird exposition of people talking about stuff that happened. Yeah. I kind of like that they just like show it to you.
Yeah, there's a little like it's a little expository, but it's real quick and you needed it at the time, so I think it gets away with it.
Is that a common thing for movies back then? Sequels?
Well, sequels.
I haven't seen a lot of sequels.
Yeah, there weren't a ton of sequels back then.
Yeah,
no, and these were really the first ones where they started doing like.
Serialized,
right? And it does feel more like a serial. Mm-hmm. The way it picks up like minutes after the first movie ended. Yeah. It's not many years later or an indeterminate amount of time later.
Yeah,
I also think the framing device is particularly interesting because it's a sequel to a well known literary
work
that where they actually include the author. They go through the trouble of casting a Mary Shelley. You know, to me, that's really incredible and really. Yeah. It's just a really interesting framing device that even
today.
It's
very meta.
Exactly. That's the word I'm looking for. It is very, very relevant to how we would do it today. Mm-hmm.
And then it also uses the trope revised ending because in the first movie, the Frankenstein's monster story is like very well wrapped up. And then they're just like, yeah, but we want to do this other one. So let's change it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they retconned a lot.
Yeah, that's fine.
But they made it like that. That's not the way the writer wanted it.
Yeah,
like they changed it on me. This is what I actually wanted to do.
Yeah, it's not like they're totally ignoring it. They have an explanation. She's like, well, actually, here's what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
So I think it's a good way to get away with retconning.
Yeah.
It was kind of interesting that she didn't even like narrate or anything. Mm-hmm. They didn't go back to her writing or anything. They just cut away from present day and never looked back, or like was it present day, or what we interacted with, was that what she had already written, or she like it's hard
that,
to tell.
I mean, for it to take place at a time when Mary Shelley would have been alive, it would have been much earlier. First Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein also. It's kind of hard to tell if it's present day 1930s or not. There's no technology. Mm-hmm. The clothing is not contemporary to that time period. It seems to be trying to take place at least like turn of the century, at least 1900, if not further back to when the book would have been published. There's no radios.
Mm-hmm. There is they have telephones and they have like, those buzzing things, like Tesla-like things, but you're right. Like, as far as beyond that, I don't know.
Anymore. Yeah, it's very like undefined and vague, like what it is. And I think that a lot of that is, a lot of the people who would have been watching this movie in 1931 remembered World War One, and so Americans especially have this like undefined, like mixed up, generic understanding of Europe. And so this is just like what Europe looks like to them, either based on what they remember seeing when they were soldiers or what they remember dad telling them or their brothers telling them, or it's just kind of like almost like a childlike memory of a place and time.
So we go back to the site of the fire and people think the monster has died. Not everyone's convinced.
So that's where the first movie ends. He's just burned in a house or
the
something?
The movie ends in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a house or something?
Mill, he... I think. Mill, no, right?
It's yeah, it's a
yeah,
windmill.
Yeah.
And it happened to have a lake underneath it.
Yeah.
That was pretty convenient.
Yeah, just, I'm like, oh, okay.
So it turns out he's not dead.
The introduction of him in this movie is pretty creepy.
Yeah, it's kind of...
Like I, you know that he's still alive, but it's also just like
yeah,
they don't. Creepy. Yeah, yeah. It, this moving thing, and then yeah.
One thing that bothered me a little bit is when he first interacts with people. The first two people he interacts with in this movie, he just straight up murders them. Like they weren't actively threatening him. Now they would have.
I mean, he's still charred, and you know, like
yeah. I mean, he's in a bad place.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Well, and what's really interesting,
he just had to finish what he started.
It was that was the murder I was thinking of about him killing the wrong person.
The little girl, right?
Well,
her.
It's yeah. It's that woman. So those two, mm-hmm. there's two women who are talking to each other, and one of them is this kind of like mean, kind of snarky woman, and she's talking about she's kind of berating the other one.
That was Minnie, right? Who had,
another one, she had lost her husband Hans, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and. She's like kind of in, she's like crying, and the other woman's like, and crying about the whole disaster, this, the flames are going, and this woman's like, yeah, good riddance to them, and kind of the mean one. The monster kills the woman who's like grieving,
yeah.
and not the one who's like kind of that you would expect him to kill. Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of, when he meets her, you're expecting this, like, you know, he's just like thrown the other woman like down a well and like yeah. just totally killed her. And you're expecting him to then kill this woman too because you've been kind of set up as the audience to maybe dislike her. And no, she lives.
Yep.
This movie has no sense of... There's no justice. There's
yeah.
No,
yeah, yeah. Just...
it's just... He's a random
he's
force.
Not good
or you know. Yeah,
he's a force. He's just yeah. a force.
Was the cut to the owl something that was done in the original movie too? Did you notice that? When he killed the first two people in this movie,
yeah,
they cut to a random like owl. And I don't think the owl shows up in the movie, unless maybe in the background, but it's not as yeah. as like in your face as the first two cuts. And I was like, huh.
One of those deep cave owls.
Yeah.
My, you know, my daughter pointed out to me the other day, man, owls have really creepy legs.
Mm-hmm. And if you're ever close enough to where you see an owl's outstretched legs, there's danger coming.
Yeah, have you yeah. seen, I think it's, is it fake or not? I feel like I've seen a Facebook picture where someone lifts up like an owl and it's
no,
like,
I think that's real.
They're like,
that's what they real. Look like.
They're like chicken legs. Yeah.
But feathery.
Yeah.
Oh my it's lord.
Terrifying.
It's like a damn ostrich.
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. why it's so tough.
Yeah.
They got talons.
Yeah.
The talons are they're lethal. It's like a raptor. Well, it is a raptor.
It is mm-hmm. a raptor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
So then where do we go next? From there.
Praetorius?
Yeah, we go to Praetorius's joint. He's got some stuff. What does he have? He's got some...
This is one of my favorite things about this movie.
Same.
It's the other... you know, it's not just... The scary stuff isn't just the monster. Oh. They know to throw in some other kind of like creepy like happenings. Yeah. And Dr. Praetorius, the mentor of Frankenstein, is the first in like a series of random mad scientists that show up in the sequels. Like
mm-hmm.
The Ghost of Frankenstein has one. House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula have just kind of these random yeah. mad scientists, often played by like Boris Karloff or somebody like that, that are just kind of like following in the footsteps of Frankenstein. I like this idea that like they were all, you know, he did something so incredible that all these other like shady scientists are trying to like even like ruin their careers trying to emulate. That's really incredible to me. Awesome. These copycat reverse murderers. Mm-hmm.
Reverse murders is a good word.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he has these homunculi, they call them, that he's created. So it's like a miniature like king and queen, an archbishop, a devil, a ballerina, and a mermaid. So yeah, it's just this creepy scene, great stop motion.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
Is the little mermaid in a jar.
Hmm.
Spinoff.
I mean, because I really want more details about how he pulled that off. Because we understand that he stitched Frankenstein together yeah. out of dead corpses. But how did you make yeah. this tiny mermaid?
Yeah, he said something about seed.
Yeah, growing them from a seed.
Well, there's yeah. thank you. Well, yeah, oh, right. let's just
like,
get into
I was like,
this.
Wow, that's here a little go. That's graphic. Yeah.
So, As Anne K. Mellor points out in Mary Shelley, her life, her fiction, her monsters, quote, at every level, Victor Frankenstein is engaged upon a rape of nature, a violent penetration and usurpation of the female's hiding places of the womb. Terrified of female sexuality and the power of human reproduction it enables, both he and the patriarchal society he represents use the technologies of science to manipulate, control, and repress women. So, especially with Dr. Pretorius, who is irritated as hell that he wants to spend time with his wife, mm-hmm. that he's not devoting his life completely to... Yeah. So we have a man who wants another man, like, help me create this human life. Stop being around your wife. Stop doing this. What we're doing, we can become gods. We can become, or we can become women.
Well, the direct quote, to a new world of gods and monsters.
Right.
Mm. So, which, again, I think... we've pointed out a lot. A lot of these older 30s, 40s horror films have a lot of the very regrettable deviant homosexual trope.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Pretorius
yeah,
is,
yeah.
falls into that.
And that's always worth pointing out that there was just a lot of just hatred. And at that time, it was still, we were still working. And like, yeah, it was a recurring thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to figure out how to create a human life without... And there's a couple other like moments where he talks about... like, you know, that this is, you know, something he's been working on, Pretorius, that he's been working toward this, that this is something he wants to do, and it's what this movie's about. That's why these two guys are together.
When you said technology invading women's wombs, I thought of this SNL skit called the Woomba. A birth control device that...
Or was it just cleaning or birth control? I can't remember. I think it might have just been cleaning, but still.
Yeah, which is almost even...
It's even worse. It doesn't even do creepier. Anything.
And it's this little pink device that's shaped like a...
Like a Roomba.
Like a Roomba, except that...
It crawls up your leg. It
crawls up women's legs.
It keeps going.
It's absolutely horrifying. And it is it's a great, I think, continuation of the Frankenstein myth as well.
So yeah, I love the scene in Pretorius's house. I like how his house too is like very German expressionist looking, as opposed to like the Frankensteins live in this fancy manor, and then the Shelleys live in this fancy like
English
stately house or whatever, and his place is dark and shadowy and
real creepy.
Lots of like diagonal lines and angular looking, and it's creepy.
Yeah, when he pulled out those tubes that were housing the miniatures, I was like, what is he gonna reveal? I was expecting just like a rat or some kind of animal or whatever, and then he just pulled out these little tiny people.
And it's so like, I mean, when we watch like King Kong, you know, which was made around the same time.
Yeah.
There's the effects in King Kong are kind of stilted, you know?
Yeah.
And those little tiny people are like perfect.
Yeah, it holds up really well.
That being said, Frankenstein's reaction to them was not as like drastic as I feel like they should be. Like, I guess he did create life kind of, but it was just like he had no reaction to these little things in front of him.
It's kind of like, well, yeah, but did you see what I did in the last movie? Come on, man.
I mean, my guy can eat all those in one bite. That was such a weird scene to me, though, because it was like, it seemed to be very light, but it didn't evoke, like, eeriness to me as much as, like, what's going on here.
Well, there's, like, a comic angle to Pretorius also, like, how he says everything is his only vice.
Oh, yeah.
That I love.
Gin.
Loved.
And yeah, gin, just like I me.
Smoking. Was it smoking? No.
We're great. Because later, he has the tobacco. Yeah. Later.
Every time, it's his only vice.
Yeah. I love that.
It's like an airplane.
Mm-hmm. I quit the movie. I quit sniffing a
Doesn't he, like, tie off at one point to inject heroin, too, with the wrong data? Oh Lord!
Barked our arrow.
So during all this, what's going on with the monster? The monster wanders around.
Yeah, he's kind of wandered around. He meets this Romani family. He burns his hand,
trying to eat their like turkey leg,
and then he meets
pretty graphically. He burns himself.
Yeah. He meets the hermit guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to ask you guys: is that Romani family? Are they from a different movie? Because I swear I've seen them before, and I can't place the male actor specifically. Looks so familiar to me.
Maybe they were stock. You know what I mean? Maybe that's recurring. That seems like a recurring.
That thing. Seems like a role you get cast to play again and again.
Gotcha. Yeah, gotcha.
Not really stock yet. Just I'd like to. I don't look into that. Thing.
Then he runs into the violinist.
Yeah.
Is that kind of the next thing that
Ave
happens?
Maria.
Yeah, the hermit guy. Who was the first person that really accepted him because he couldn't see? Do you think it was because he couldn't see or he just didn't?
Yeah.
He was also lonely himself and needing somebody.
One of the saddest lines I've ever heard in a movie. Every day I've been praying for God to send me a friend. And I was like, oh, buddy.
So you guys have all seen Young Frankenstein before you saw Bride of Frankenstein, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not that guy. Is it harder to see that, like, as, like, empathetically when you've seen it as, like, a joke line?
Not really, because it's done so well.
Like, it's really the same. That scene in Young Frankenstein is... Very little of it is different.
Yeah,
the dialogue's almost the same.
Yeah, if it was, I don't know. I think because of as you said so well, like it's such a tragic situation. This poor guy's out in the woods playing violin to himself, praying for a friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's like hard to laugh at that.
Yeah, and then their interaction together, like he can't see him, but he figures out that he's in pain, and.
Because he touches his hand, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he's like, all right, well, like, you're not doing well. Come on in, man. Well, like, it's cool. Let's... Mm-hmm. Does he make him food or something like
that? Yeah.
Yeah.
And they smoke.
Yeah. Like,
good.
He's just... He wants to be nice to him, and the monster has somebody be nice to him. They're cool. Right. They just, like, chill. How long could they have chilled? Like, if nobody else would have come? Like, would they have just hung out for the next 10 years? That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like he can talk. He can talk. They would have
been a cool
been able to have conversation after a while.
Flash forward, Frankenstein's monster is completely like speaks.
He's got a beard.
He's got a beard.
He's got one of those, you know, those like hippie like
wild hemp, man beards.
Those big hemp like hoodies. He's got one of those.
I was picturing him like, and then like on top, and he picture him rolling his R's like, oh good day, like. What a great morning. Yeah,
this is a totally different dude.
Exactly.
Totally chill.
One of my favorite lines in this scene is when he says, I love dead, hate living.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
What is... Well, I feel like I'm getting ahead to the ending.
Go for it.
Just, we can jump around.
A line that he says at the end when he...
We belong dead.
We belong dead.
Mm-hmm. I think those are good. They mirror each other well.
Yeah.
That's really heavy.
But it also goes back to what you were saying. I don't know if it was on this episode or last episode, Eva, about how this is all just... It's the... You know, Frankenstein is God, and the monster is man who rebels against
him. Oh, we were talking about that before we started.
Like, he doesn't... He didn't sign up for this shit.
Right.
Like
and he's lonely and he's scared and, you know, everybody's out to kill him.
Yeah, like, it sucks. Like, this dude's situation sucks.
Is this a good time now that, segue into, like, how the bride's situation sucks?
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to her. The Bride of Frankenstein, let me just point out, falls into the trope of what we have called Get to the Fucking Monkey.
Yeah, right.
That's called The Bride of Frankenstein. What I wrote down is the episode of Itchy and Scratchy where they have Poochie and they spend the entire time like, what are we going to get to the fireworks factory? Like, they take way too long to get to the Bride of Frankenstein in this.
Well, is he married to his work?
Oh.
Yeah, and I guess, like, the Bride of Frankenstein...
Is actually...
Oh, yeah.
We're not thinking of the Bride of Frankenstein as like, colloquially now people call the monster Frankenstein, but... Is that actually who we're talking about, or is it the other Frankenstein?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Frankenstein.
His real bride.
Yeah. Well, I think, like, doesn't Pretorius say it? Doesn't he say it's the Bride of Frankenstein?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
At the very end, yeah. I did notice rewatching it again, and I forget if they do this for a lot of older movies, but the title on screen... Was it around there's quotes around it? I don't know if that's like what they do with all of them. So it's like the Bride of Frankenstein in quotes. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that is like their own like thing. But yeah, maybe it's, they do that with every movie. But I was like, huh, that's...
Yeah, I do love, isn't it just circling back, we talked about how Elsa Lanchester is credited as question mark. But in the first one, Boris Karloff is credited as question mark.
In this movie, he's credited
as... Yeah, in this one, he gets stopped billing, obviously.
It's Karloff.
It's Karloff. Just Karloff. Yeah. Which, is there anyone who does that now?
No, not last name.
Not last name. We've got, like, Madonna.
Mm-hmm.
But they're,
Prince. They're... But nobody goes just by last name.
Mm. Yeah, it's fallen off, man.
I think it's left over from the stage.
Yeah, who would go by last name if you...
Leto.
Cumberbatch.
I like Cumberbatch a lot.
Cumberbatch. I mean, does he need a first name?
Well, no. I think
Galifianakis. His first name's incredible too, though.
Does who?
Does the Biebs count?
Bieber.
Shane Bieber. No, because he's never billed that way.
He's never billed as the Biebs. That's just what Dan White calls him.
Right.
Well... I've been thinking about the bride a lot and just how, like...
Yeah, so let's get to the fucking monkey. The bride is, how does she come about?
Well, going from the hermit, bad stuff happens there. Then the monster gets captured by Dr. Pretorius again? Or he finds his way back to Pretorius?
They're in the crypts.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, that was something that I was like, how did they get from one part to the other? But, yeah.
Yeah, sure. It's like serendipitous.
Yeah, and they're just like, he just happened to wander in since you see him. But,
yeah, he just kind of notices them breaking open a grave.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I do appreciate that when he gets arrested and he's, like, chained to the thing, you know he's going to get out. And they really just, like, they get it over with real fast.
Yeah, they do. I do appreciate that. There is something about this town, though, that gets me. And that is, like, everyone seems to be super blasé about the fact that there is a monster killing people. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all... It's like they spend all their energy during the mob scenes. And then they're too tired to, like, follow up.
Yeah, there's no follow-through.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
There's no follow-through with these guys.
Like, the cops got them. We should be okay. Yeah. And then everyone just leaves.
And then once the flames start, then everybody's around again. Like, fuck this monster.
Well, that may be a little
ravel,
bit...
Ravel, ravel.
Where were you at when he was roaming the town between the burnings and the pitchforking?
That may be a little bit like the Kitty Genovese thing where everyone thinks that someone else is going to take care of it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh yeah, fasten the chain. And they're like, oh, the other guy will fasten the chain. Well, guess what? He got out like as easily as one can get out.
So that was, he was going
to
do it.
That was a great cut though. When the one guy was saying how like, it was just like nothing to be worried about. It's just and whatever. And then he busts through the door and then starts chasing through everybody. He's like, man, that's like really great. Comedic editing.
Yeah. So then after that, Pretorius gets the monster to kidnap Frankenstein's actual bride. She's going to be held hostage until Frankenstein assists him.
I really thought it was going to be her that was going to be used
like
for
it is in the
bride.
Yeah, you'd think it would be.
Well, it was in the book.
Okay, because I was like, that'd be super dark. Awesome.
Not to mention, like, one of the early examples of a scientist being forced to create something or work on something, like,
against
while a loved
will.
One's being held hostage. That, man, that is a trope. I feel like it's been used a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about
Breaking Bad. Like, Breaking El Camino Bad. Just came out, and they make Jesse do that in the
thinking
last
about
season.
Off the top of my head, Terminator. Too. Doesn't that have a slight, a brief angle where the Skynet?
Oh,
the hand
when they kidnapped the Skynet creator. I guess
the hand guy or whatever
to create anything.
Yeah. He's the guy who's has a grenade at the end. Oh, I gotta
remember. I need to rewatch it.
The black,
yeah.
Oh, but they're
you know, they're trying to kidnap,
getting information from
him. Yeah, right? That whole kind of coerced scientist thing. I think is a great trope.
Yeah,
I didn't actually really like Henry Frankenstein as a character in this movie. I thought he was kind of just along for the ride for the most part.
He's portrayed a lot differently than he is in the first one. In the first one, he's more...
I have a hard time believing he's like a mad scientist in the first one.
Yeah, in the first one, he's much more like Pretorius.
Pretorius.
The egomaniacal.
I'd say Pretorius overshadows him in like creepiness. And
yeah, and it's supposed to be like in this one, he's kind of like learned to regret based on the events of the first one. He now has regrets of what he did.
He was thrown off a building.
Yeah, he gets thrown off of.
He looks great after being thrown off a building.
Yeah. I love his hair. I love how like when he gets more like hypomanic, like he starts to like the hair follicles start to like I want to try to emulate that.
It's a great look. Yeah, it's a great character like thing that they
So then instead of using his wife, they find a
19-year-old corpse.
Yeah, it's someone who's walking around.
They're very mysterious about how the body was attained.
Well, yeah, they show how the body was obtained, sort of, or they imply how the body was obtained.
That was the heart.
But that failed, right?
Oh, so then they had to pay.
He paid somebody to do something.
There was the one that they grave robbed, and then that heart didn't work, so Carl. Great name for a
side character that has two words, two lines.
Like straight up murders somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's going to... Is it not her body that becomes the bride, or is it just her heart that becomes the bride's heart?
I assumed it was her heart that becomes a bride's heart, which does beg the question, why not just use her?
I thought they just...
It just seems like more work. Yeah.
I thought they just used her, but you never really see her well because she's only in it for...
Try to reconstruct the whole thing.
Yeah, she's in the shit...
The old body.
Yeah. So I assume they just used her, the girl who's walking down the street, but you only see her for like 2 seconds and she's in shadow, so I don't remember if it's like literally her or not. I guess it's kind of a moot point. It's they got a body from somewhere and they definitely killed somebody, so
It looks like multiple bodies together just based on the like
the stitching.
Yeah. Okay. So then they do some more trickery. They do some more science.
Some lightning happens.
Yeah, that all the special effects, or not special effects, but just all the mechanical stuff and the sparks and everything, it looked really awesome.
I found it really irritating. Like
it's really loud.
In kind of a like, I assume purposeful, irritating way when all like the lights are flashing and everything. It's really bright, and the movie's for the most part pretty dark. So it's actually bothering you, and it reminded me of, I wonder if it's done intentionally to make you feel like Frankenstein having fire waved in his face, like you're having all this bright light shot in your face, you know, for the first time in most of the movies, like shadowy and darkly lit, and then suddenly you're
like the experience of being born.
Yeah. So I really like that, even though it made me feel like
It was effective. Wanted
to put sunglasses on. Yeah, it definitely did what I think it was supposed to do. So then the bride is... they call back the line, "It's alive." With the... It's now she's alive.
Her, outfit, or, like, when she's wrapped up and she's got the pins, like, going around her forehead, it's, like, such a crazy-looking, like, imagery. It was so... Like, they only had it on screen for a couple seconds. I was like, man, that's so... I mean, they must have had really, like, a lot of fun creating that look for a shot. Like, a very short shot, but...
Yeah. Is this the same designer? Did she also do, like, the bandages with the sheet?
She was... Well, she did the gowns. I'm sure she contributed to the costume. It's Vera West. She's uncredited for the film. This is one of the first films that she worked on. So, you know, I know that Under the Bandages was definitely her, but I think the mechanics of it was probably Jack Pierce, the makeup artist.
Gotcha. And Vera West went on to do the costumes for most of the Universal films.
Almost all of the Universal horror films are her work.
So you mentioned, like, being born, and I think the bride's birth, I think it's one of the just the great moments in film. I thought of something... watching it the other day, that she's kind of like the Lisa Simpson of the Universal Horror Monsters. And I thought about like her, Meg, Summer from Rick and Morty, and just like these like, and it's probably a problematic trope, these almost like mistreated, like
female characters that come in after the kind of like franchise in there. And like this whole idea of not picking like your, I think about like Lisa didn't pick the family that she's in. She's completely out of place. It's not her fault that, you know, nobody, and Meg, it's not Meg's fault that nobody likes her. It's like there's this recurring sense of this woman character being like not belonging. I think about Morty's line in 60 Minutes to Summer, where he talks about nobody exists on purpose, nobody belongs anywhere.
Yeah.
And just how the bride is like thrown into this, immediately into this like horrifying situation where she's expected to perform or be this thing.
Yeah.
And absolutely is like no way.
And she figures it out a lot faster than the original creature did. Like she knows right away. Like, and Elsa Lancaster said that her primary, like, the thing that she was trying to draw on for this character was a swan, which are incredibly beautiful and incredibly mean.
Yeah.
And that the hissing noise that she makes is a swan.
She had very
how cool
and bird-like movements too when she's looking around, like very deliberate.
Well, even looks. Like her hair and you know, it's looks like the wings of a bird. About
the costume and the image of the bride. Yeah. I mean, next to the bolts and Frankenstein's neck. I mean, what's more
the
iconic
streaked hair
than that streaked hair?
That is awesome.
Like, when did they set her hair?
Yeah,
so that was a byproduct of all the electricity.
That's what I kind of.
I mean, it didn't work on Frankenstein. But Frankenstein's hair grows in the film, in the original, very slightly.
He had less electricity, and that's why. It wasn't as bright.
I would think they got the same amount, but he was larger, and so it didn't really.
It was spread out.
Right.
Yeah, affects her more.
Yeah, that might be it. So then he wants to be with her, and she says no. So he decides to.
I like how they have
do a murder suicide.
Yeah,
I like how they have like a self destruct lever in the laboratory.
Yeah. The thing it's to have.
Like, well, it's a giant lever too. I like how it's like really accessible, very like simple to operate.
Yeah. It's like very cartoony.
I think if you're a mad scientist though, you should have one of
those. There's no like safety latch on it or anything. You gotta bump it up from the bottom and then bring it down.
Yeah, he didn't even like. It was just like,
I think it's smooth.
You need a self-destruct button, though. I think every good scientist has a good self-destruct button. Usually they're a little bit more inconspicuous, but I think it's important to have. You never know when you're going to be in a situation where you need to take some other people out with you.
Just kind of, you know, got to burn it down and restart, I guess.
Yep.
Jesus.
Haven't we all been there?
I mean, the Frankenstein's monster in a classic, like, toxic masculinity-driven move.
He's an incel.
Know? Yeah, he's the original incel.
Straight up, right?
You guys, I have every time I hear that word, I have to say that it's not a word. We already had a word for that. Rapists. Or would-be rapists. He's the original. He's part of the alt-right.
It's also, to go back to talking about...
Wow, Frankenstein's monster was radicalized into he's a child, a young man who's a wayward youth, disaffected youth that becomes violent over time. Because of his lack of guidance, and then he becomes radicalized into becoming part of the alt-right.
And when they tell him, when they tell the creature, like, we're going to make you a friend, he first says it's a man, and then he corrects him and says, no, it's a woman. So it's almost like that he didn't, you know, he's being forced into this like heteronormative relationship where he's supposed to marry and procreate. And
he's like, that's not really.
He's this.
Yet he's forced to, so then he has all of this self hatred.
Right. That she rejects him. And
Wow.
I've never heard that take. You heard it here first.
Yeah.
This movie's got layers.
I had heard it as like when talking about like the homosexual subtext of it, that it's not just Dr. Pretorius, that the creature himself.
Yeah. Well, he was really comfortable with that hermit guy too, but I did think it was kind of tragic, but also amazing that they introduced the title character and then kill her off like
right away.
Just in a big explosion, end of the movie. That's it. And it just ends there.
That follows the trope called secondary character title. So instead of a character title, like
Carol.
Carol. Carol's about Carol. Yeah. Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. Coco.
She's not in for too long. Yeah, Coco. Coco's another good one. Margaret. So I just watched the movie Margaret. The original version is 2.5 hours long. It's pretty slow. Not a lot happens. But the director's cut is 3 hours long.
A lot happens.
Absolutely nothing.
So as soon as we finished it, Nellie was like, ugh. And I was like, oh, I got to buy that director's cut.
Favorite movies are when nothing happens beautifully.
Yep. Man. What's that a quote? What's that from?
I forget. I think it's a tweet. A twit.
A twit. Yeah, I think that is. I think that was, it was from Twitter, but I remember reading that. I'm like, yep, that is my cup of tea. So Bride of Frankenstein, they all die. They never close out the bookend, but I don't know. That ends up okay for Dr. Frankenstein and his wife. They scurry on out.
Yeah. Scurry. Yeah, they do.
They weren't supposed to initially. They were going to, he was going to die. And then the studio said, no, like, you got to make it at least a little bit happy. Mm-hmm. So they let him.
They got to stop killing the monster just based on
the sequels. The
sequels.
Like, yeah, you got to like keep it. If this was a Marvel movie, the monster would like get away and go to a different planet for a movie. And then he'd come back and be like, hey, I'm back. Pay me my $30 million for making this dumb movie.
Yeah. So, any final thoughts?
I still want to see the new Dark Universe reboot. Only ignore Tom Cruise. We have Brendan Fraser as the mummy somehow in a movie we didn't see. And we have Benicio del Toro's Wolfman. And I want Gary Oldman back as Dracula.
Who's the bride?
Who is the bride?
Who should
be? Kay Stu.
Yeah.
It's gotta be Kay Stu.
She already has the face. Someone who looks like they're kind of dead.
I didn't see. I also didn't see the bride biting her bottom lip at any moment, which is.
Hey, we're all Kay Stu boosters here.
I'm not a Kay Stu booster. Nope.
How many Kay Stu movies have you seen?
I saw Twilight.
Well, okay.
I mean, that's...
That doesn't count.
But he did see it a lot.
Yeah. I still watch it. I still watch it a lot.
My Ooh. Final thoughts?
Mm-hmm. I thought it was rad.
Yeah, it's really good. I never got to Minnie. I think she's terrible.
Oh, yeah. No, Minnie's incredible. she steals the show.
I think she's awful.
She's otherworldly and terrifying. And she's. I was really afraid she was going to be one of those... like people like in The Mist, the woman who kind of preaches and is like,
oh yeah,
yeah, the evil woman, but no, she was pleasant and
she's way hoot. She's way too much for me.
Her reaction to when the monster comes back is incredible.
It's too much humor though.
It's so cartoony.
She murdered the town with all the giving her so much joking and
So the Dark Universe Bride of Frankenstein that's been shelved like indefinitely just popped back into my head. It was supposed to be directed by Bill Condon.
Oh.
Who was the director
of your favorite movies?
The director of Gods and Monsters.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
Wait, didn't he also direct
Beauty and the Beast?
Did he not direct Twilight too?
Gods and Monsters is a weird
I'll take your word for it.
It's a interesting reference to
Brendan Fraser.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
he directed the first two Twilight movies.
It's an
movies.
Interesting reference to a quote from the film.
It's all full circle here, guys.
I hate that I know that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really?
I mean, I knew it before looking it up.
Yeah.
Do I really hate that I know that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm a little bit proud.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Dr. Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I love gin.
It's your only vice.
It is my only vice. And I have a mermaid in a jar. Anyways, so that was our review of Bride of Frankenstein. If you've seen it, you can let us know at onthetropes@gmail.com. You can follow us on facebook.com/onthetropes or twitter.com/onthetropes. What else?
You join Saturday nights for on Twitter.
Svengoolie.
Live tweet.
Next episode's 200, baby.
Next step is 200. We're going to do...
something.
Here's what I propose. We're going to do our top five hot takes. We're going to... Everyone's going to come up with a silly question that everyone else has to answer.
Silly.
And then I say for that one, we propose...
Silly or interesting?
Either one. We propose what movie, like, we'll use that as a lead into a scary movie that we have to, that we will be watching.
I want to go back to the thing where we predicted what the other people were going to do.
Oh, well, no, I say we do that for our, when we do the what you're the book
oh,
person
right,
of,
right, right.
What you're the keeper of. A little bit of a production meeting.
Yeah, we'll need to figure this out.
Yeah. Yeah.
There will be an episode 200 listing.
We'll have an extra special episode.
Yeah, it'll be...
We're going to learn about drugs.
Very extra special. Yeah.
Man.
I'm so excited.
The best one.
I've been studying a lot.
I'm so scared.
I know I have.
All right. See ya. Wait, did we say our names?
No.
Whatever, I'm Nick.
Eva.
Thumbo.
And Kyle.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.